Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Martin Erdman, who is an ethicist. He is a professor. He, of course, works in Basel, Switzerland. And, of course, coming from a Christian perspective, he deals with the science of nanotechnology and many of the scientists in Europe who, of course, plan on re-engineering mankind. These are people who are certainly transhumanists. They really believe, of course, that we can alter mankind, we can change the genetic makeup, we can change the very substance of what God has created. And, of course, the question rises, is this ethical? Is it possible? And, of course, what will the consequences be if we try to distort what God has created in mankind and in genetics? So with that as a background, Dr. Erdman, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Maybe we could start out talking a little bit about Rosicrucianism. Certainly, most people don't understand the Rosicrucian movement and, of course, how this ancient mystical religion, of course, impacts on the thought of scientists today, because we ordinarily think of scientists as, you know, adhering to science, you know, certainly the idea that some of these would have embraced these magical, mystical beliefs is almost beyond comprehension. But as somebody once said, you know, that when you disbelieve in God, it's not that you believe in nothing. It's that you believe in anything, and of course there is an element of truth to what they believe in, but not something that we should be delving into. Please give us the background of the Rosicrucian movement and how these mystical beliefs are influencing what is going on today in the world.
Yes, well, the Rosicrucian movement really started in the early 17th century. It was a movement which was basically an underground secret society movement, which basically was started by a Lutheran pastor in Germany. His name was Johann Valentin Andreae. He was a Lutheran pastor, and he studied at the University of Tübingen, got together with a group of esotericists at that university, with one professor, his name was Christoph Bissold, and they basically started that whole movement. They began to write manifestos, the so-called Rosicrucian manifestos, which were first circulated privately among esotericists in Germany, and then eventually published in the German city of Kassel in 1614. The first Rosicrucian manifesto was published in that city, and then 1 year later the second was published, and again 1 year later the third was published. And this is how this whole movement got going.
Well, what was the purpose of the movement, and what did they really believe? Of course, supposedly there were followers of this person called Rosenkreuz, anyway, supposedly lived in the 1400s and had access to certain mystical information. So what was this really all about? What was their purpose and goal? And of course, why did they capture the imagination of so many intellectuals?
Yeah. Well, the whole Rosicrucian movement and these manifestos were really built upon a allegory. a story which really didn't have any substance in reality. It was just a story, but it was portrayed in such a way that many people believed it was true. And the central figure was a man called Rosenkreuz. This means a cross and a rose.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Dr. Edmund, go right ahead.
Thanks. Okay, well, it was really centered around that person, Rosenkreuz. This means a rose and a cross. And the symbol of Rosicrucianism is a cross and a rose which circles around that cross. Now, this Lutheran pastor, whom I named Johann Valentin Andre, came up with the idea to spread that legend, that story, among the intellectuals of Germany. And they basically invented that whole movement by saying that this Mr. Rosenkreuz had knowledge of secret wisdom, which he received from his different travels in the East. And eventually someone found his grave, found the writings, and they, the Rosicrucians, are now in possession of that secret wisdom, and whoever wants to join the movement will be given access to that secret wisdom.
Is there secret wisdom there that they can tap into?
Well, in a sense, yes. It was really Gnosticism which very spread. It was some kind of teaching which was part of a Gnostic belief system which came about in the 2nd and 3rd century AD near Alexandria in Egypt, and then spread over the Near East and eventually came to Europe. But it was esoteric wisdom. It was not, or it has never been, Christian truth. It pretended to be Christian truth, but it was really a rival religious system.
All right, and Chris, what then, of course, was this wisdom that these people were tapping into? And what? Why would anybody want to tap into it? What was the advantage of tapping into it and acquiring this secret wisdom?
Well, there was a promise attached to that secret knowledge. The promise was to become divine, to become immortal, to become all wise and all knowing. And it was really a kind of esoteric message, esoteric teaching, and obviously many people, especially the intellectuals of the time in the early 17th century, were quite intrigued by that promise and wanted to gain knowledge, wanted to gain wisdom, wanted to become divine, and so on and so forth.
And so you would think that intellectuals would realize that this was sort of a false promise, but because, of course, the whole idea of becoming immortal, you wouldn't ever die, and yet, of course, it attracted so many people at that time. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Martin Erdman, talking about the Rosicrucian belief, which came about certainly in the early 1600s. And of course, basically, it was a rehashing of the old Gnostic beliefs that there was secret knowledge out there. And when you had that secret knowledge, you would get secret power. You would become perfected. You would become immortal. You would become a god. And, of course, if you tapped into that knowledge, why, you really would acquire certainly a great intelligence. And so this was very, very prevalent among the intellectuals of Europe at the time, wasn't it?
Yes. It really started in the Renaissance, when the so-called Hermetic writings came to Italy. It was first studied in Constantinople, which was obviously conquered by the Turks in 1453, and when some of these scholars from Constantinople came to Italy, especially to Florence, and brought their writings with them, especially the Hermetic writings. And in Florence, the Medici had set up an academy, the so-called Platonic Academy, which was led by Marsilio Ficino, a scholar, who was basically paid by the Medicis, and who was charged by Cosimo de' Medici to translate the Hermetic writings into Latin. And from that translation, the scholars in Europe became acquainted with this hermetic writing. It was a collection of different writings, really. And as I said, the main promise was the divinization of man, man becoming immortal.
And did this sort of tie in with the alchemist belief of that era?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Hermeticism and alchemy can be used synonymously. One expresses the other. It is really the age-old quest for the so-called philosopher's stone. Alchemy was above all the knowledge of the secret initiates, and its goal was esoteric knowledge. And it also taught its adepts certain techniques which they could then use to make themselves into some kind of immortal being. Perhaps you know that one of those techniques was to use lead, a base metal, and transform it into gold. But this chemical reaction was really a symbol for humans to become immortal, because gold was the symbol of immortality.
And of course, what they have always told us, and what I learned in school, was the fact that, of course, alchemists wanted to turn dross into gold. But that was the message for the common people.
Yes.
And of course, there is always a dual message there, one for the common people and one for the elite. And of course, the real message was the perfectibility of mankind, and the gold, of course, was the soul of the man who, of course, had acquired the knowledge and could become divine. Would that be a fair estimate?
This would be exactly what the alchemists try to do, correct.
Well, now, of course, what does that ancient history have to do with what is going on today in nanotechnology and the battle that you are engaged in, this ideological battle or struggle that you're engaged in today with the intellectuals of Europe, these scientists who are using technology to try to create the transhuman being? So pick up the story there and bring forward these mystical ideas into what's going on today.
Yes. Now let me just finish off with the original thought in tying the Rosicrucians to alchemy. Many of these Rosicrucians, they are alchemists. So in essence, they basically just propagated the alchemistic teaching among its followers. And yes, to bring it to our time, once I got involved with the ethics of nanotechnology at the University Hospital of Basel, I realized that there were some scientists who were keenly interested in alchemy, who were keenly interested in trying to accomplish what the alchemists of old have tried to do, meaning to perfect human nature. This was the foremost goal of the alchemists, and I also discovered that it was and has become the foremost goal of the transhumanists of our time. And thus I see a clear connection between the two.
All right, fine. And so basically, of course, we have people today who have a different world vision. And many of these are scientists, and many of these people are working in nanotechnology. Could you explain to our listeners what nanotechnology is? Because it's really rather complicated. And yet, of course, it is exciting, and yet it's frightening in its implications, because we're talking about re-engineering mankind. Go right ahead.
Yes, indeed. Well, nanotechnology is a new technology. It concerns itself with the molecular structure of matter, and it wants to manufacture any kind of matter by assembling one atom at a time. And the goal is that eventually one could create a human being by just putting one atom next to another, and then create a human being, but a human being which is supposedly perfect.
But of course, to many of us, the idea that they could actually build a human being, it seems ridiculous. Would they try to build the human being, or would they take the human being and try to alter their genetic structure?
Yes, they want to change it because they think that the human makeup, human nature, is flawed. It's not perfect. And they think that the humans are smart enough to come up with a design which is perfect. We can come up with and use technology to create a perfect human being.
But how can they possibly do that? How can they change the molecular structure of human beings?
Well, they just envision that they will be able to do it. They have obviously not succeeded in this goal. This is their goal. They are, I think, they will never reach that goal. This is my personal opinion. But even if it could be reached, they are decades from actually accomplishing this feat. But they even admit that at least 20 years or 30 years or perhaps even 40 years are still needed to achieve that goal to create a human being.
Well, because now, how would they then introduce a new genetic structure into a human being? How would they change the structure of a gene or a chromosome?
Well, they want to replicate what nature does, and they speak of assemblers and disassemblers. These are tiny little sub-microscopic machines which are used to assemble these atoms. And they also think that these assembler machines have little arms who could grab molecules and then add them to a work piece. It is really utopian if you think about it. It sounds, as you said, it sounds really crazy. But this is what they talk about. This is what they write about. I have read quite a number of documents which were published on the net, and they also publish books which go into greater detail of what they want to accomplish, as I have just basically tried to explain it.
And, of course, basically they're really very active. They seem to be well-financed, very well-organized in Europe. Are they just as well-organized here in the United States, these people who are dedicated to this mystical belief that nanotechnology can be used to change humanity?
Yes, they do. They have a World Transhumanist Association, and currently, if I'm still correct, they have about 3,000 members worldwide. It is still a very small following, but some of the members are highly influential, especially at the National Science Foundation, which is part of, which is a foundation which is sponsored and funded by the United States government.
And of course, does this get into genetic engineering, and this whole idea of genetic engineering of, plants? We know they can genetically engineer cotton, and certainly genetically engineer canola and soy and corn,
yeah,
and many other things. Is this the same general idea, genetic engineering of crops and then of animals?
Yes, nanotechnology is just one component of a number of other technologies which they want to use. Thus, there is an initiative called Converging Technologies, which has been set up and initiated at the National Science Foundation in Washington, D.C., and they want to combine different technologies together, such as biotechnology, obviously, which has some relevance to gene therapy and gene technology. They want to combine information technology, nanotechnology, and then cognitive science.
And are they in the process of carrying that out today?
Well, they have been trying to promote that movement for at least 6 years now. There has been a study published by the United States government in 2002, which clearly spells out what they want to do in regards to combining these technologies.
And I think that people have to understand a lot of this very bizarre sciences being funded by the United States. But behind that, there are powerful mystical and magical forces. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yes. As we concern ourselves with this movement, we realize that it is indeed a religion in the making, which goes back to a very old religion, mainly the ancient mysticism.
The ancient mysticism is being applied by our scientists now, who disbelieve in God, and now they believe in anything. Well, Dr. Erdman, you go ahead and pick up the story there. So, Sidney, you're in the very center of this movement, and you write for their journals. Is there anybody else over there, at least in Europe, who's...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
in Europe and perhaps even in the world. Much of the experimentation is being funded by the United States government and by other institutes here in the United States as we attempt to re-engineer humankind. And, of course, it's sometimes referred to as transhumanism. Well, are there any things specifically you could point to that they have actually been able to accomplish, other than things we've talked about, simply mechanically altering the heart?
Not really. They are still in the vision stage, as I want to call it. It is very utopian. And if you look at the mystical writings of the Rosicrucians, for example, you realize that many of the goals the Rosicrucians set out to accomplish have never, ever been reached. And thus, I can safely say that if the transhumanists try to accomplish the very same goals, there's a great possibility that they also will absolutely fail. As a matter of fact, my firm belief is that there is a self-destructive principle built into their plans. What I mean by that is that the closer they get to their goal, the closer they also get to the point where their whole enterprise will self-destruct. And it will cause great harm. I'm pretty sure about that. And it has created great harm in the past. And thus, I am quite concerned in regards to the future if these transhumanists will push further and try to reach their goal, which eventually will only lead to great harm and destruction.
Well, do you think that there are mystical forces out there that they can tap into for knowledge and for various things that they do?
Yes. We have to take into account also the supernatural. I believe there are demonic forces in the world who can give certain supernatural powers to humans. I am absolutely convinced that this is true, but we also need to know that God is sovereign, that God controls this universe. He controls us as human beings, and thus he will not allow certain things to happen. As a matter of fact, if certain things are being done by humans which go counter to his eternal designs, he will intervene and will prevent humans to accomplish their goals.
But I think it's important for our listeners to know that there really is a supernatural dimension out there. There is power that you can tap into, but believe me, do not even think about possibly trying to accomplish that on your own, because, of course, it will destroy you, as it has destroyed everybody who has ever gotten into this, whether they be certainly the Rosicrucians or the leaders of Masonry or Theosophy or certainly the Gnostics. This mystical power is not something that God ever intended us to tap at, because between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. So
yes.
Where does the Stanford Research Institute fit into this?
Now, it's interesting that you ask, because the Stanford Research Institute was basically the institute here in the States which tried to spiritualize science and technology. We try to merge the two realms together, religion and science. And it did try to do that by a specific study which was commissioned in 1972, was finished and published in 1974, and its title was Changing Images of Man.
And, of course, they had really unlimited funds, and they, of course, gone extensively into the supernatural, trying to tap into the supernatural and see how this could be applied to what's going on today in a similar manner as the Rosicrucians had, you know, 4 or 5 centuries earlier. This is so incredible that an institution like Stanford University would be trying to tap into the paranormal.
I think it was not necessarily the university itself, but
it was the institute.
Certain scientists employed at the Stanford Research Institute, such as Willis W. Harman.
Right.
Who was a director at that institute and also oversaw this academic study, Changing Images of Man, which, by the way, can be downloaded from the internet. It's freely available.
No, how would the people find this if they wanted to find it?
Well, I just found it by just using Google and typing in changing images of men, and then using the name of the author or editor, Phyllis W. Harman, H-A-R-M-A-N.
H-A-R-M-A-N, that's Willis Harman. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Dr. Martin Erdman. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Dr. Martin Erdman, who is visiting temporarily here in the United States and will be going back to Switzerland. Oh, when do you leave, Dr. Erdman?
We leave on Saturday.
All right, Fine. And so are you looking forward to getting back over there to Basel, or are you enjoying your time here in the United States?
We have thoroughly enjoyed our stay here for about a month now. We visited the in-laws, and I also went on a speaking tour. I had about 19 different speaking engagements in the last 3 weeks.
Oh, well, that, you must be exhausted then. That's a lot of speaking. But do people really understand the implications of what you're talking about? Because this idea that there are these mystical or magical forces that these people are trying to tap into, that these men supposedly of science, at least some of them, really believe that there is this secret power that they can, of course, utilize to advance their goals and objectives.
Well, I think some of these scientists who are involved in transhumanism have also a specific religious preference. Most of them are Buddhists, and they are also very outspoken in regards to their hatred of Christianity. They don't like Christianity at all, because they realize that Christianity is basically the opposing religion to what they want to do. And thus they speak out and try to muscle Christian voices such as mine. But obviously we do have also opportunities to let people know about our own Christian viewpoints.
And of course this is really what it's all about. We are involved in a spiritual battle being played out, in this instance on a scientific and ideological battlefield. And very, very few Americans, I think, really understand the implications of what's going on, or the spiritual forces that are involved in the genetic engineering, and of course within the nanotechnology. Would that be a fair appraisal?
Yes. Unfortunately, many Christians, both in Europe as well as here in the United States, are thoroughly ignorant of what is really going on in the field of science and technology. They don't really understand that it is a spiritual battle, that there are certain groups who want to use science for their own purposes, and they are religious groups. As a matter of fact, if you are interested to Google the transhumanist church, you can find it on the internet. There is such a thing as a transhumanist church. They have their own statement of faith. They have their own home Bible study groups in quotation marks. What they mean by home study groups is...
Hold that thought for just a moment here as we bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Erdman was simply talking of that if you really would like to look into this more, there actually is a transhumanist church. You can Google it in, transhumanist church. They have their study groups, and they are trying to spread this this new religion, all throughout the world.
Yes.
And suddenly, by the miracle of the internet, they can actually do this, and they actually have study groups. Do they have meetings, things of that sort?
Yes, absolutely. It's just parallel to what evangelicals do in their home Bible study groups. They have similar home study groups where they teach and study the transhumanist manifestos or the transhumanist frequently asked questions or different other publications.
And really, they're looking for a post-human man or post-humanoid creature, aren't they? This isn't their objective?
This is exactly what they want to do. They speak a lot about post-humanity, and what they have in mind is a being which is part human and part machine. Because they think that we have to replace the human nature, which is mortal, with some machinery which can be replaced and renewed at will.
Now, of course, the military is working on this, aren't they, to build the super soldier who can fight without sleeping, who certainly can resist the compassions of a human being. They're trying to build a new super soldier. Have you looked into that at all?
Yes, I have looked into it, but this didn't really comprise the key or core of my studies. But I have looked into it, and I have also found certain scientific papers which spoke about brain wave transmission, so that thoughts could be transmitted from one soldier to another using that kind of technology.
Really, the things that they're talking about are frightening. Science gone mad, as it were. Dr. Frankenstein would be envious. Well, before we go on, Doctor, would you like to put out your website so people would know how they could get more of your information? Certainly, you were kind enough to email me a great deal of it, and it took me many hours to go through what you'd sent me. But how can people get to your website and get the information on not only the scientific, but the mystical and magical forces behind the scientific work that's going on, not only in Europe and in Basel there, but throughout the world today?
Yes. I have published about 150 different articles on this subject and related subjects, but most of these articles are really in German. I have just a few articles written in English, and these articles are published on a website which is called Harriscope. Harriscope.com.
That is, of course, a takeoff on the horoscope, but this is Harriscope, like heresy.
That's correct. And if you go to that website, you will find some of my English articles, as well as other articles by other authors who address, for example, the Lateran movement, which is really a heresy, which also tries to create a new breed, a new human. And many of the beliefs of the Lateran cult is replicated or paralleled by the transhumanists.
Well, of course, you have, when we talked before, you talked somewhat about Professor Quigley and his work, Tragedy and Hope. Where does, of course, Professor Quigley's work fit into what you're describing?
Now, ultimately, what these transhumanists want to achieve is a world community, a one-world government, a world government. And, well, you know that Carol Quigley was a history professor at Georgetown University, and he was very well acquainted with the Round Table Group and with the Council on Foreign Relations and some of the supporters of the idea of a world government. And I have written a whole book about it, which is called Building the Kingdom of God on Earth, which dealt with the early ecumenical movement in the early part of the 20th century, which was used to propagate the American public to accept the participation in an international organization such as the United Nations.
And, of course, these people, of course, Professor Quigley was writing about it, were the intellectual elite who wanted to bring about a one-world government, a one-world religion, of course, because there's an intense hatred of Christianity, and then, of course, I believe that they intend to install a new leader, because I believe that there is a spiritual force behind them, the spiritual force that's described in the Bible. But the average individual doesn't understand that these people are working within the political system as well as within the scientific system, and what they really want to do is create a perfect utopian society themselves.
Yes.
A utopian society without God. Would that be a fair appraisal?
Yes, absolutely. It's quite logical if you think about it. They want to create a perfect human being, but they will not be satisfied with just doing that. They also want to create a perfect society, and then beyond that, a perfect world society, being ruled by themselves, by these transhumans, or posthumans rather, who will then usher in paradise on earth as they think they will. But I personally would reject that view based on clear scriptures, which we find, for example, in the book of Revelation, we have certain statements concerning the appearance of the Antichrist, who will be a world ruler, but who will eventually be defeated when Jesus Christ will come back and set up his own kingdom here on earth.
And I think really what's so difficult, of course, is for people to understand that these things are not imaginary, they're real. There are people out there with a different worldview. They're all joined together by one common belief, and that is an intense hatred of Christianity.
Yes.
On the other hand, of course, if you're a Christian, why, of course, you must reject their beliefs, and of course, you can go to the, you know, certainly the words of the scripture, but how do you, you know, talking with these people, dealing with these people, how can you even, you know, communicate with them? Because you're communicating at an entirely different level. You're coming from a Christian point of view,
yes.
Of course, believing in the validity of the scriptures, and they're coming from this mystical point of view, looking, of course, their ability to harness these forces to transform the world.
Yes. But ultimately, we have to recognize that there's a spiritual warfare going on, and God, Jesus Christ, has commissioned us to testify about his truth, about his plan of salvation. And this is also what we try to do. We don't necessarily only speak about the scientific aspect or the philosophical aspect, but we also bring in a clear gospel presentation. And yes, you are right. Many of these scientists will reject us, will laugh us, ridicule us, and try to, try to make us look stupid. But ultimately, it is God who is in control, and we just believe in his sovereignty that he will call some of these scientists to himself and will help them to believe in his son, Jesus Christ.
And in the final analysis, it's really a matter of faith that you acknowledge the divinity of Christ, as that do I, and the inerrancy of the scriptures.
Yes.
And, you know, in some ways, why it's, you know, people, I could see why people would say, well, that's just ridiculous. No, well, show me the proof. The difficulty is that they can't prove anything on their side either. And,
correct.
Of course, hopefully something will come that God will work in their lives and transform them. Have you actually had any of these extremely well-educated scientists actually come to accept the Lord?
I have not experienced this as of now. However, I have given a extensive paper at the University of South Carolina at one time, and I would say 70 to 100 different scientists were sitting in front of me, listening to me, explaining the different aspects of transhumanism, and I also went into a explanation of alchemy. And when I ended up with pointing them to Jesus Christ as the only solution, as the only hope we humans have, and I expected them to be really upset about the things I told them, and then I had to realize that at the end of my presentation, everyone was laughing in approval of what I had said.
Well, I think even the scientists, of course, were looking for answers, and of course they think they can find it in science, and they can think they can find it in mathematics, they think they can find it in all of these other sources, and yet, of course, they're all empty promises, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, yes, the scientists are looking for answers. I mean, it is an age-old quest to defeat death, to become immortal. I mean, all of us would like to be immortal, but this is the exact message which Christ promises to us. He promises to us eternal life if we believe in him, if we accept his atoning death as an offer, a divine offer to us, and we have to accept it by faith.
And, of course, this is then is the promise of immortality. And, of course, people say, well, how will we know, you know, until you get there? Well, you're not going to. Oh, you're going to accept it on the basis of faith. But you actually, of course, I think those people like Dr. Erdman and others, and I know from my own personal experiences, that you see God's hand constantly in your life. And once you've turned yourself, your life over to Him, your life is transformed. It may not always be easy, but He will guide you when impossible things happen. And I'm sure that you've experienced this as well, and you're being guided into what you're doing today, haven't you?
Absolutely. And as I said, I had the opportunity to address different groups, different churches. I was able to give a public lecture at Jacksonville State University in Alabama, addressing about 250 students and faculty, and presenting to them the biblical truth about salvation, about the only hope which we humans really do have, which is the hope to enter heaven and be forgiven by Jesus Christ because He died on the cross for us. And also, we do have a heavenly, we do have an earthly hope as well. It's not just an heavenly hope. We have an earthly hope because Christ said that once we believe in Him, He will come into our lives by His Spirit. He will guide us. He will help us to live this life as best as we possibly can.
And I think that really, of course, this is our hope, this is our promise, and this is really, as we look and see what's going on in the world today, things seem to be going from bad to worse from the point of view, if you're simply looking at things from a material point of view. But if you know that God is guiding what's going on, and we may be in for some difficult times, but God will be there to help us through it. If He's not, we would never be able to get through what lies ahead, certainly on our own. And those who reject God, really, I'm sure many of them have this terrible feeling of hopelessness. They're trying to find an explanation and a hope in science. And I don't think they have that any hope there, do they, really, other than maybe they'll come up with a scientific discovery and get a Nobel Prize, but that's not going to bring them eternal life.
Not really. And we just need to open the newspaper and see, look at the page which has the obituaries. We have not really come any closer to conquering death. Death is a daily phenomenon. It's a daily occurrence. And we just need to come to the understanding that there's only one person who has conquered death, and this is Jesus Christ, because he came back from death. He was resurrected. And He lives today, and this is the only hope we can offer a dying world.
Amen to that. Well, Chris, certainly you were on the radio show of our good friend John Leffler. Have you been on many other radio programs in your short tenure here?
Well, as you said, I was interviewed by John Leffler just the other day, and this morning I was interviewed by Francis and Friends, which is the radio station, I forgot the concrete name. I think it's Sun Life or something like that. It's a radio station in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And they have interviewed me for an hour this morning. But the key topic this morning was my book, Building the Kingdom of God on Earth.
And, of course, we've actually interviewed you on that book, and I think it's a very important book. How could people get that book? I'm not even sure how I got a copy, but I was able to get one and read it and found, really, of course, that you were looking at things exactly the same way I was, and there's a few people who do.
Yes. Well, it is published by Witz and Stock in Eugene, Oregon, published in 2005, and it can be obtained by just ordering through any bookstore.
And again, the title of that book?
Building the Kingdom of God on Earth.
Building the Kingdom of God on Earth.
That's correct. Witz and Stock.
All right. Now, of course, again, what was the station there in Baton Rouge, Louisiana?
I think it's Sun Life. It's the Francis Swegert radio station.
I'm sorry, the what radio station?
The Francis Swegert station.
Okay, fine. All right, fine. Well, anyway, we'll look that up and get a copy of that interview as well.
Yes.
Well, of course, Sidney, our guest has been Dr. Martin Erdman, who realizes, of course, that what we're seeing today is a spiritual battle. It's being fought on a political battlefield. And the battlefield, of course, when we elect our listeners, our electors here, of course, by me our candidates here. Of course, the trouble is that they're all controlled by the same people. It's all make-believe, but that's part of the illusion that they create. There is a political battle, but it's, of course, not the battle, of course, that you described by CBS, ABC, or NBC, battle for the hearts of men. So, basically, of course, Dr. Erdman then talks about not only what's going on politically and culturally, he also talks about what's going on as this battle is being waged within the scientific community.
Yes.
And now, do you actually teach at a university or you simply work there at the hospital?
At the University Hospital in Basel, I'm basically a research personnel. I do research. I read books and write academic papers, publish them in different scientific journals, and also give public lectures at different universities. However, I also do teach at Patrick Henry College in Virginia and at a Christian seminary in Hanover, Germany.
I see. Now, is this a medical school or is this just a regular college?
It's a regular Christian liberal arts college.
What is happening to Christianity in Europe today? Is Christianity growing at all, or is it sort of fading? Certainly, at one time, of course, Switzerland, Germany were the very centers of the Protestant religion. But, of course, my impression, having been there a few times, is that the Christian roots are pretty well forgotten. Are they still there? Is it growing at all, or still retreating?
Now, if you can imagine a thoroughly secularized society, you can imagine what it is like to live in Switzerland or Germany. It is thoroughly secularized. The Christian influence is next to non-existent.
Well, of course, this is tragic because, of course, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty, but when the Spirit of the Lord has been removed, why, of course, we are always concerned that liberty will be lost as well. Hang on, we'll be right back. Well, Dr. Erdman, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Okay. Now, what I really want to stress is that I see...
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt, that nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-
And, of course, you invited Dr. Erdman to come over. And a lot of this is very difficult to understand, that there really would be within science and mysticism. But as I said earlier, of course, I've forgotten who it was, that one of our philosophers had said that when people reject God, it's not that they believe in nothing, it's that they will believe in anything. And many of these people, many of our scientists, many of our intellectuals have embraced these mystical beliefs and tapped in an effort to tap into the supernatural. There really is a supernatural force you can tap into. Sonia and I, a conference we're going to be having this weekend, we're having a woman who was a medium. Now, she's not now. One of my friends, of course, called me today and was a little upset because we were having a medium. We're having a woman who could be considered having been a medium, who, of course, has accepted Christianity. But she saw all sorts of miracles when she was dealing with the supernatural, thinking they were of God. And, of course, not all miracles come from God. You must understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out in a political and ideological and cultural battlefield. And she was actually witnessing these supernatural miracles that were coming from the other dimension. And if you're coming, of course, remember, our doors will open probably at 7:30 in the morning. That's at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. So if you want to come early and browse around for a while and get to meet the people and meet the guests who will be speaking, well, you can come. My wife is saying that she thought the doors would be open at 7:30. I will start speaking at 8:30, at least introducing, and then, of course, I will give the first speech. And we've got a great lineup of speakers. That's this Sunday at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there across America certainly will want to get the DVDs that we will produce, and we'll have these available and on the talks that are going to be given. Well, certainly, if you want to really understand what this is about, certainly the book will introduce you to it. It's my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Or you can watch the DVD, but you really want to have both the DVD and the book. And you can get the Brotherhood of Darkness special, the tape, the book, and the DVD, or the videotape if you prefer. And then, of course, we hope that you get my talk on the Forbidden Secret and get the syllabus goes with that. Why? Because it takes you into this secret, into this mystical belief that has been around going back to the time of the Tower of Babel and to the Egyptian era, and then, of course, the Assyrians, and then the Persians, the Medes and the Persians, and then, of course, going on into Greece and the teachings of Pythagoras and Socrates, Plato and Aristotle, and certainly their student Alexander the Great, who was able to harness this supernatural power. So with 36,000 Macedonians, he was literally able to conquer the known world at that time. But he did it by tapping into the supernatural power and was able to defeat Darius, with really hundreds of thousands, if not millions of men and elephants. And yet Alexander the Great was able to conquer the world because he tapped into the power. And you must understand it's there, and you must understand its danger. You must understand its power. You must understand that there's no way you and I can stand against this other than in the power of our Lord Jesus Christ. So understand the spiritual nature of the battle. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV. War. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Remember, you can listen to our programs there. For 9 hours a day, you can hear 4 hours live. You can certainly get our other programs as well. You get the programs there. They're archived. They're on MP3. They're on blog. And, of course, you see the DVDs. We have a section on DVDs. We have a section on other DVDs. They're all free. We want you to get the information. We want you to share it with others. Read our letters. We'll be back in just a moment here. It's Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Horton, and we're going to be talking about hypnosis. And how hypnosis can be used through other medium of radio and television and crowd control is being used at this very time to influence the minds and emotions of the American people in preparation for the coming election. Dr. Horton, would that be a fair appraisal of your belief?
Yeah, it's used all the time, and if you know what you're looking for, you see it in everything. So, yeah, that's a great overview of it, and thanks for having me on.
Well, now, is your first name William or Willis?
William.
William, okay. We were just talking on our radio program about a Dr. Willis Horton, who had actually been at Stanford Research Institute. But why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about your background and of course, how you could be concerned about this, the idea that people could actually fall under the under hypnotic trance or hypnotic, be susceptible to hypnotic suggestion. The average individual thinks that this could never happen to me. So pick the story up from there.
All right. Well, my quick background is... after high school, I went in the military, did a few different things, and became an alcohol and drug counselor, and that led me into going back to school. And while I was an alcohol and drug counselor, I started studying hypnosis and what they call neurolinguistics. And then I did go back to school and get my doctorate in psychology, and I got my license. But I've always pretty much said I was a hypnotist and a neurolinguistic programmer first, even before psychology. And, so I studied this whole hypnotic phenomenon, not just the kind of hypnosis that you think of when you think of, like somebody with their eyes closed following a hypnotic command or dancing like a chicken in a stage show. It's the kind of hypnosis that we go into every day. It's like a social hypnosis. I call it waking hypnosis, and that's the kind where best example most people can relate to off the cuff is if you've ever watched a movie and you really get into the movie and you have a big emotional response, you cry, you get upset, it makes you really, really sad. You had to be in an altered state. You had to suspend disbelief because in your mind, you knew it was fake. Tom Hanks was never on a desert island. But if you watched Castaway and got into it, you had to suspend disbelief. So we're trained, especially with with the mediums that we have now with movies and television, to suspend disbelief and let make-believe become real. And one of the things I point out is that those lines are becoming blurred more and more all the time with what they call so-called reality television and things like that, and that sometimes the sizzle is more important than the steak. And so that's that's kind of a brief overview of it and how I got into following politics. For years, I've talked about, you know, how great speakers use hypnotic language patterns and some of these hypnotic techniques. And I would always talk about Bill Clinton because he was trained in it. One of the guys he, by admission, that helped train him as a speaker is a guy named Tony Robbins, who's a big motivational speaker many people have heard of, and he uses these techniques. So, you know, because I talked about Bill Clinton so much, when this the Obama phenomenon started happening, people started asking me questions about that, and that's kind of how one thing led to another. I've written a couple of articles, and more from an academic standpoint, and it's kind of taken off from there.
Well, I think that, Chris, most people aren't acquainted with the concepts of neurolinguistics. Most people, I said, imagine, you know, you're going to go into a hypnotic stage. You're sitting there in a dark room, and they're using a pendulum or a watch or something to get your fixation on there. But people don't understand that these techniques have been refined. And we are subject to hypnotic suggestion every day of our lives. Well, Dr. Horton, you were right ahead.
Yeah. Well, it's like the, you know, a good example, like for speaking, is, you know, eliciting states in people. So, you know, this whole thing about motivation and one of Barack Obama's books, and the reason I think he's studied this at least at some level, is one of the books he likes and talks about was Robert Greene's 48 Laws of Power. And Robert Greene studied Machiavelli, Hitler, some of the people that have acquired and used power over the years, and it mentions hypnosis and hypnotic techniques. And so that leads me to believe that at least he's very cognizant of it and studied it. And then also, I always look at it with one other eye, which is, you know, he's a Harvard-trained lawyer, and a lot of times when you hear lawyers talk, much like his running mate, Joe Biden, they're much more fact-oriented, detail-oriented, like process-oriented. And then when you hear Obama speak, he's much more flowery with his language and general and not, you know, and saying things that are brilliant in one way, like, you know, change you can believe in. Now is the time. You know, when they get the whole audience chanting, yes, we can, is a very hypnotic effect. And so what that does is begin to lower people's critical factors. And, you know, if you get someone to believe that you believe the same thing they believe, then you're influencing them at the subconscious level. And when I point all this out, I don't make any judgments whether it's right or wrong. I just, to me, it explains the Obama phenomenon, which is really what I was looking at, because when I hear someone make the statement that, you know, he's the greatest leader of a generation, and, of course, the psychologist in me goes, okay, what's the evidence for this? What has he done? What has he led? What has he changed in his life that would let someone believe that he's the greatest leader of a generation? Not that he doesn't have the potential. If someone said he has the potential, I would understand. And when they compare him to John F. Kennedy, which is interesting because John F. Kennedy, you know, by the time he ran for president, had been a torpedo boat commander, saved his crew in combat, was a congressman for 6 years, and then a senator for 7 with a lot of legislation behind him. So it's just kind of an interesting process. So what I was looking at is how it explains this unbridled passion people have for Obama.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, when you talk about neurolinguistics, now this is a specific technique that has been developed by the scientists, really, of course, by the many, I'm sure, has been certainly worked at by the CIA and other mind control experts, going into how you can motivate people, how you can control their beliefs. We're going to be back in just a moment, and I hope you'll explain neurolinguistics. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest this evening, Dr. William Horton, and we're going to be talking about neurolinguistics, or neurolinguistic programming. It is a specific technique. You can look it up on the Internet, but it is a technique that is used for mind control. So could you describe what neurolinguistic is and how this can be applied to mass psychology as it is being applied today?
Right, I'd love to. In fact, it's the core of a couple of the books I wrote, Mind Control and Make Yes Contagious, because it's about what it is. It's how you think, not why. It's the things your brain is actually doing to process information. You know, It's kind of like a couple of examples would be if someone's ever wanted a new car and they haven't decided what kind of car they want yet, so they're looking at all these models and, you know, you're thinking about it. Then let's say you decide you're going to buy a car, like you're going to go buy the Ford Explorer. Then suddenly you see that car everywhere you look. And what that is that it's a little part of your brain that you've turned on that said, find this for me, it's important. It's called your reticular activating system. And once you turn it on, it will actually go out and find it for you in the world. That's why when like someone decides to buy a car or you like a car, you can see it everywhere. You also see it with people that have maybe been married many times, and it's like their spouse looks a lot alike, you know, and things like that. Another way to look at like how your brain processes information is when you think of somebody you really, really like and you kind of imagine them in your mind, you get a certain feeling in your body, and it kind of takes an image, and it's kind of in a spot in your mind. And then if you think about a person you really don't like, of course, it brings up a different feeling in your body, and it takes a different place in your mind. And so if you try to take that person you don't like in your mind and move them to the same spot of the person you like, your brain says no. But with hypnotic language, there's ways that you can shift that around, and so you can use that kind of information. And so that's neurolinguistics. And what they found is they use a lot of hypnotic techniques, but they do it without the whole, like you were saying, with the pendulum watch and close your eyes and relax. You can do it with language. And an example would be something like, if someone wanted to do it for sales, it'd be like, you know, as you mature, it's usually the things you don't do that you regret. It's the things you look back and go, man, I wish I would have done that. So, you know, in 6 months from now, I don't want you to feel bad about not taking the opportunity to go to my website and look at my books. So I want you to go ahead and do that now so you don't feel bad in the future, because I don't want you to regret this. And so that's a hypnotic, like, command. And I didn't do it as I would have spread it out a little more and padded it, but it kind of does these little weird things in your head that you can't get people to take action 100% of the time, but it's much more likely you can influence them. And really what we're talking about here is influencing people.
And, of course, Bill Clinton was a phenomenal speaker. You know, you couldn't help but like him. He had a nice smile, a nice presentation, a nice sort of drawling type of voice. And you almost, even though I knew he was a scoundrel, but you certainly couldn't, as you listened to him, he would draw you in.
Oh, yeah. And, in fact, in 92, when he was running for the White House, I remember watching a debate with him and the first, you know, George Senior and Ross Perot, and you know the polls were all tight and all that. But he comes down, a lady in the audience asked a question about, you know, people that weren't making it real well, and the other two candidates answered the question. Bill Clinton wouldn't sit on the chair; he'd walk down, and made this motion where he made a fist and touched his chest and went, "I feel your pain," and that's when the election started to change. Because he was good at eliciting the audience's or people's reaction and using that. And then in 96, when he ran for re-election, I was watching him give a speech, and he made all these statements. You know, America's booming, America's at peace, prosperity. I mean, all these statements of fact, which makes people feel good. But every time he said anything good about America, he was touching his tie or touching his face. And so it was like he was bringing up those good feelings and putting it on him, Bill Clinton. And then when he talked about problems, he made a motion with his hand that in the camera looked like he was pointing at Bob Dole. You know? And so I'm sitting there going, this guy is good. He is very good at what he's doing.
Oh, I love this line of Barack Obama's today. You know, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? I'm not going to ask you that. I'm going to ask you, are you better off today than you were 4 weeks ago? And
yeah.
Then the audience, oh, no, we're not. You know, it's a great line. And, of course, the timing on bringing about this financial crisis, nobody asked, why did the establishment bring about this financial crisis just before the election when it could only serve to help Barack Obama? But, of course, he's going to certainly ride that the way things are looking. He's going to ride that right into the White House. Of course, what people don't understand is the establishment solid behind Barack Obama. They're not behind John McCain. Everything points to the fact that the leaders of the establishment have decided They want Barack Obama, and that's why, of course, in all probability, he's going to get elected. So it's fascinating as we see this this whole scenario unfold, although you never know what could happen even within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's true. And it's like I'm always reminded of the pundits and everything, and because I'm a sports fan, remember last February, all the pundits were saying that the New York Giants shouldn't even show up and play the Super Bowl. Of course, then they win. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it's going to be closer than anybody thinks, and I think it'll be much like the last two elections, decided by less than 1%. And in my gut, I think it could go either way. And, you know, we see the polls tightening because one of the things, kind of a thing that brings you out of hypnosis is when something kind of wakes you up and gets your attention. It's kind of like I always use my movie analogy. If you're watching a movie and you're like really into it, and then they do something so stupid, you go, I can't believe the rest of the movie. That's a trance breaker. It brings you out of trance in the movie. And like last week when Obama made the comment about spread the wealth around, you know, we need to take from them and spread the wealth around. And that was for a lot of people, not everybody. That's where the polls started to shift back a little bit because, and now McCain's running with that comment because that's kind of the antithesis of what not all Americans, but a lot of Americans think. And so it's kind of an interesting thing the way you see people kind of get lulled into trance and then get woke up and that's kind of stuff I try to point out in my books, my training, because mainly I run around, I don't have a clinical practice much anymore. I run around the world training people in how to do this kind of stuff.
Well, of course, can this be done by a radio broadcaster? Can it be done by certainly somebody on television?
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, today I'm with my family this week. We're down in where we're from originally in Mississippi. And you know, I live in Florida now. My dad and my sister live up in Indiana, and we're down visiting family. And we're watching TV together, and there was one of the fundamentalist ministers on TV, and kind of was driving them crazy because they go, oh, look, this is what he's doing here. And, oh, look, this is what he's doing here. And so, yeah, you see some of the people doing that. And I think some of the good radio hosts do it. And I'm sure you do it unconsciously. In fact, I'll send you some stuff so you can do it better because that's what they do. I mean, you elicit things in your audience and, you know, you get people to listen. And some of the people do it in an interesting way. And I'm sure, like, you know, at least a third of Rush Limbaugh's listeners only listen so they can yell at the radio. You know, but that's. But as you well know, a listener is a listener. It drives up your Arbitron ratings. and so, you know, there's a lot of them that are good at that, and they can keep people engaged. And, you know, I think people do it naturally. And then of course, if you go and read about it, or use some of these techniques, it just makes it a little bit more conscious and subconscious and in alignment.
Well, certainly what are some of these techniques? You've described some of them. Certainly, Bill Clinton always pointing to himself when talking about how good things were and pointing to Bob Dole all the times, any time he was talking about something being bad. What sort of things can a talk show host or a television host do to influence the audience so that they cease to be thinking and simply begin to accept these ideas being programmed into them systematically?
Well, one is you use a very hypnotic language pattern, which is you speak a little slower than normal, and you take your time, and you speak in about 8 to 10 words, little sentence fragments, where then you take a pause, and then you speak a little bit more, and you talk about things, and you take another pause, because that brings people into you and they start to listen. And also, you don't want to be too specific in your language, especially if you're trying to influence them. You want the people to kind of elicit the feeling inside themselves. So you talk about and this is one reason why politicians have always done this, where they don't give specifics, but they talk about things like, you know, change you can believe in, yes, we can on the Obama side. The other one is country first. I mean, they feel good. These statements are good. And then you begin to, you know, elicit it. And, of course, you know, in the Democratic National Convention speech, Obama actually had a direct hypnotic command where he was, at the end of his speech, after he elicited, like, JFK 14 times, Martin Luther King 10 times, and a lot of flowery speech, he actually said, and there'll come a time where a light will come down from upon you, and it'll enlighten you. and you'll have a moment of truth where you'll say to yourself in your head, I have to vote for Barack Obama. That's a directive, not a command that, you know, that you have to vote for me. And he kind of got, you know, razzed about it a little bit, but I'm like, I thought it was brilliant, you know, because that's what he's trying to do, is he's trying to sell himself on going to vote. And if you think about it, when you're in a voting booth, a light shining down upon you.
No, of course. What about when, of course, he gave one of his speeches against the backdrop of great old-fashioned white Greek pillars, you know, and suddenly it almost looked like he was in a temple of some sort.
Right, that was the speech. That was the at the Democratic Convention. And of course, when you create massive spectacles, it draws people in. And just like the whole idea, some people go, why do you want to go speak at the stadium in front of 70,000 people? Well, there's something about that power, that linkage, that the more people, they're more interested in you and things like that. And everyone wants to be part of the group. And so it draws you in.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with our special guest, Dr. William Horton, talking about brainwashing, I said the neurolinguistic programming, hypnosis, how it's being used today. Well, certainly, I'm sure this has always been used. It's certainly been used.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Things. Our telephone number, if you have a question for Dr. Horton, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, 464-8295 if you're here in the Central Coast of California. And Dr. Horton is pointing out, because we're seeing these techniques being used very effectively by Barack Obama today. What about John McCain? Is these techniques overtly that you can see as you watch his speeches?
Not as much, but at the Republican National Convention, when they were showing John McCain's life story, it was very emotional, and it tagged in. And I thought one of the most moving things and hypnotic was when one of his cellmates from when he was a prisoner of war came out and gave a talk. I think he was either an Air Force colonel or an Air Force general, and a couple of his Navy guys that were in the prisoner of war camps with him gave a talk. And that was very, very powerful at a subconscious, almost guttural level. And because, you know, he doesn't talk much about his military background. And I think he's missing the boat on that. I think he ought to be using that. But I don't think he uses these techniques as much. I think he's more of a to-the-point speaker. So it kind of comes across that way, but, you know, I just don't think he studied it as much, and, it kind of comes across in some of the talks.
All right, fine. Well, we've got Tom calling from Windham, New York. That's Windham, New York. That's upstate New York. And to get Tom, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Well, I would be interested in the guest. And also on you, Dr. Stan. I'll make it short and sweet. My reason for calling is actually selfish. But,
all right.
Here it is. I, not this past 9/11, but the two prior 9/11s, I protested at Ground Zero. Now, the first year, we were photographed by an old hippie and perhaps others. The second year, the firemen in uniform were photographing us. Now, if and when martial law is declared, somebody like me, am I total small fry that they're never going to bother with? Or on the contrary, are people like me going to be the very first to be rounded up? That's my question.
Well, I don't think that, believe me, I think you're pretty small fry, and I wouldn't worry about it, you know. They're going to have to get an awful lot of people before they come after you. Do you have any thoughts on that, Dr. Horton?
I think you crush the bigger dissidents first if you're doing it from a mind control aspect, because, you know, when you slap down a big name, it's more powerful. But even just the little, the thing about the firemen showing up in uniform is an intimidation technique that, works quite well. So I would expect more of that, because, you know, that's kind of a subconscious, you know, it kind of gets you to tamp down some of your own behaviors.
In fact, I think it's very interesting. Of course, apparently there are several people have made a comment that when suddenly there are going to be some major crises coming up. I was talking to a gentleman today who said he'd heard Colin Powell saying on the television interview that suddenly on the 23rd or 24th of January next year, two or three days after Barack Obama is inaugurated as the President of the United States, there's going to be a major crisis in America that the American people will not be able to deal with, some sort of a major crisis we will not suspect, not be able to deal with. How do they know there's going to be a crisis within a couple of days of Obama's being elected? I think that they're trying to frighten us to death. You would never make a statement like that unless, of course, you were doing it to to play on the emotions of the American people. And the one thing you want to do if you want to subjugate a people is to frighten them into subjection. What are your thoughts on that, Mr. Horton?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The fear is a fabulous way to control people. And in the 2004 election, I was watching them talk to, I think it was the vice presidential debate, or it could have just been a speech where Vice President Cheney was talking. And they asked a question about education and something about, like, Pell Grants or, you know, making education affordable. Anyway, education is important. You know, basically said a comment like, education is important. We have to get education, but we must remember 9/11 changed everything. There are people out there that want to kill your kids. And then he went into this whole thing about 9/11, which was to elicit the state of fear, you know. It really had nothing to do with the question, but, boy, you get people afraid, you can get them to take action.
Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, Dr. Stan, and certainly our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Tom, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we let you go?
No, but I find your show fascinating, and I listen every night, and of course I try to tell other people. I do tell other people about it.
God bless you. Thanks.
I did just want to say one last thing.
Right.
This Colin Powell, this is the first I've heard of Colin Powell saying that. And it seems to me that to be president in the U.S., apparently you have to be compromised, and he is. Because apparently he was born in Kenya. Am I correct on that?
Well, there's a great deal of evidence to suggest that's correct.
Well, in this case, if he steps out of line, you don't have to kill him. You can just take him out with the courts.
You're absolutely right.
So he's compromised from day one. And I believe McCain is compromised also. I don't know if this is true, but I have heard time and time again that he is married to a mafia princess.
Who's that?
McCain.
Well, I'm really not in a position to comment on that, but certainly I do not like either candidate, and I will not vote for either candidate. I will not vote for the lesser of two evils. God bless. Good night.
Thank you, Doctor.
And let's go to Jeannie calling in from Santa Cruz. Jeannie, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
I do. As I understand, the position of the eyes, when someone answers a question to you, they can either construct images or have personal feelings, or how do you work that into your classes, Doctor?
Oh, okay, yes. Eye movement tells you what part of the brain you're accessing. If you look up, you're making pictures, the visual cortex of your mind. If you look side to side, you're making sound. And if you look down, you're either talking to yourself, or if you look down right, that's where you access strong feelings. Thus, I think that's where that old saying, which we've all heard, where someone says, that's downright important to me, and their eyes will look down to the right. And if you look up to the left, that's where you usually create pictures in your mind, or you're creating something. If you look up to the right, you're remembering something. And so there's some thought that when you're talking to somebody and you ask them a question, if they look up right, they're remembering it. And if they look up left, they may be constructing it. But I always warn people that doesn't mean they're lying. It could mean they're translating it. They're thinking of how to say it. There's a lot of things that go on, but they may be being more creative with the truth when they look up. But when people look down a lot, which again, as we pointed out a moment ago, Bill Clinton, he looked down all the time.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment. Of course, our guest is Dr. William Horton. We had Jeannie calling in from the Santa Cruz area, was asking, what about the direction of the gaze? And of course, Dr. Horton was replying that suddenly there's a great deal of difference when people look up, when they look down, when they look to the right, when they look to the left. Each one of these things has a significance as far as neurolinguistic programming is concerned, and I know Jeannie has a chart on that. Jeannie, anything else you wanted to say?
I was going to ask the doctor, the politicians, can they control their eye movement people understanding neuro-linguistics programming, that they will create their eyes to go a certain place. So it seems like they're telling the truth, or they're feeling their emotions truthfully.
Oh yeah, once you're exposed, then you understand this kind of thinking, this technology, this code of how your eyes move. It's easier not to move your eyes, and you become aware of it. And, of course, actors study it, like Dustin Hoffman in the movie Rain Man. He studied the eye movement of people with autism, which is a very specific, usually it's up very fast, down very fast. And so he got, you know, they pick it up. So, yeah, you can become aware of it and use it so you can appear more truthful. And it's like, and it's hard to use this on pathological liars because they understand it, so they'll make really good eye contact. But the one thing that's hard to control consciously is when you're under stress, your eye blinks speed up. So you blink more. And so when you ask somebody a question, if they start blinking a lot, it means they're in internal conflict. That doesn't necessarily, I would say that doesn't mean they're lying, but it means they may be under conflict. And again, I remember when Joe the plumber was talking to Barack Obama, his eyes were blinking rather fast because you could tell he got caught off guard a little bit. Same thing happened to McCain. And again, I throw in one other thought with that, not to get too technical, but if they're in a studio and they're in bright lights like they were in the debates, you kind of have to judge everything a little different because those lights are blinding when you're up on stage, as our host, who's probably been on television several times, can tell you.
Anything else, Jeannie?
No, thank you very much.
God bless. We will see you on Sunday at the meeting.
Yes, thank you.
Bye-bye. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Dr. William Horton, and because he has studied neurolinguistic programming, hypnosis, and how this can be utilized. And certainly, of course, you want to understand how to utilize it. On the other hand, you want to understand how it is utilized so that you will not be able to, we will not be taking in, so that you'll be able to think and think intelligently. Dr. Horton, do you have a website? Where can people get your publications?
Oh, yeah, thanks for asking. I'd love to. It's www.nfnlp.com. That's nfnlp.com. And I have books on there, and I even have a couple in ebook form, so they're cheaper, and you download them and you can read them, you know, very quickly, and you got them on your computer. And I have home study courses on how to learn this if some of your listeners want to learn a little bit more of the details on it. And of course, because of the political process, I put everything on special, because I want this information out there for people to know, because it empowers you, you know, because I think people have just begun to discover their power. They don't know their importance to the universe, and so I know the more you learn it, the more power it is out there. And with people like yourself, you know, trying to wake the population up with the education that you're putting out there, it's very empowering.
Well, of course, we're hoping to have some little influence on the course of the world. Maybe we're just tilting at windmills, but at least our job is to do our best. I feel I'm called to do this. My wife is willing to stand with me, my son, and certainly we have a good crew on board who are helping us. And I do believe that we're reaching people and getting them to think. And, of course, what you're trying to do is getting people to think as well, and I certainly respect you for that. I think that these techniques are there. Whether they should be used or not is not the question. They are used. People have to recognize them. People have to realize, of course, that many times they are deeply influenced by them. And I think it's amazing, of course, that because people will follow Barack Obama because he talks about change. But he never tells you what that change is going to be, you know. You have a feeling that it's going to be for the better, but is it going to be for the better? Actually, Adolf Hitler changed Germany. You know, Benito Mussolini changed Italy. Chairman Mao changed China, but this is the sort of change we're going to get from Barack Obama. He just talks about the need for change. He talks about the wicked people on Wall Street. And certainly I agree with all of the things that he says. But, of course, what is he going to do? He's probably the most radical. He is by far the most radical leftist in the entire United States Senate. Of course, if it's going to make you feel any better, John McCain is the most radical leftist within the Republican Party in the United States Senate. it. So we've got the most radical leftists in the Republican Party running against the most radical leftists in the Democrat Party, and as far as the United States Senate is concerned, and nobody's telling the American people, oh, there's not really much of a difference between the two candidates as far as what they're going to do. But we're not going to tell the American people that. We don't want to disillusion them. We want them dutifully to go to the polls on, you know, on election day and vote for the candidate of, well, somebody else's choice, because we don't pick the candidates. They're picked during the nominating process, and they're always sure that they're a Republican and a Democrat who will follow along and do exactly what they're told to do. And if they don't, well, they can always send them to Dallas.
Yeah, exactly. And like that's one of the big complaints with the McCain campaign is people that have followed him for years go, where is the McCain we knew in 2000? And like you said with Barack, one of the mind control guys out there, I can't think of his name, Blair Warren, I think, is, he made the comment one time that if you encourage someone's dreams, justify their failures, confirm their suspicions, and help them throw rocks at their enemies, they'll follow you wherever you want to go. And if you kind of follow that thought, that I just gave a Barack Obama speech, you know, and they encourage the dreams. The failure's not your fault, you know, and there's other people out there to get you, Wall Street, you know, and the bankers, and they become the common enemy. And so that's how you really influence the masses and create a cult.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-4649-5. And of course, Dr. Horton is just talking about the techniques that can be used and can be used so effectively to control your mind, to make you like somebody, even, of course, if they're a very dislikable individual, like, let's say, Bill Clinton, one of the most despicable human beings we've ever had, you know, in the White House. And yet, you know, today, why, of course, everything's forgotten. We've forgotten, of course, you know, all the people that he pardoned who were crooked. We've forgotten Belinsky. We've forgotten that over 100 people who challenged Bill Clinton during his political career ended up being killed or assassinated. All of this is forgotten, and we just love Bill Clinton. He's just such a likable guy. You know, it's amazing to me that they were able to rejuvenate and reconstitute Bill Clinton, just like they were able to bring Richard Nixon back, the man who betrayed our boys over there in Vietnam year after year and left them there to die for political purposes. And yet, and even after Watergate, they were able to make Richard Nixon look not too bad. It's amazing what the games they can play with the minds of the American people when they control the media. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Well, you just brought up a natural phenomenon brilliantly, which is, you know, as time goes on, people look back with rose-colored glasses. And so when they look back, oh, that was great. I always use the analogy of if you go to an American Legion and you sit at the bar, all the guys say, they should have stayed in. I love the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines. I should have stayed in. And I'm thinking, well, if that was true, you probably would have stayed in. Chances are, when you were doing it, you hated it. That's why you got out. But now, 30 years later, you're looking back. And so that's like you just pointed out with Bill Clinton, even some of the people who kind of borderline didn't like him much now look back more with rose-colored glasses, and that's kind of what happened with Nixon. They waited a few years, and when they started bringing him up, you know, they would really focus on, like, his trip to China and some of the things he did like that. So, yeah, they rewrite history, and that's one of the things that's a natural hypnotic phenomenon. And the media does it with music all the time when they find the music that was popular when you were young, if you're the target demographic of the group, and when you were about 18 to 22, and they put that music with the car that they're trying to sell would be an example. And like a few weeks ago, I was listening, and not really listening, but the TV was on in the background, and I heard a Led Zeppelin song, and that's for my age group. And I'm like, start dancing. I turn around, and they're selling me a Cadillac, which that let me officially know I'm an old white guy, because, you know, I'm their target demographic. So they went back to 1972, you know, when I was a senior in high school, and they were listing that feelings and putting it with the car. So, yeah, it's all around us in the media, and, of course, politicians use it, and everyone uses it.
Well, I think the people have to understand that we're certainly the advertising industry is experts at neuro-linguistic programming, isn't it? Certainly the way that they sell it, they spend so much money on advertising. I mean, there's no reason they would spend all that money on advertising, whether it be cars or Coca-Cola or certainly whether it be Lipitor, whatever they're trying to sell.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be investing all that money unless the advertising really worked.
Oh, yeah, and a good example is, you know, they do these public service announcements, and there's, you know, the alcohol industry pays for them, so they get tax deductions, and it's the ones, you know, don't drink and drive, drink responsibly. But I ask your audience, the next time they listen to this comment, because this is how you'll hear it. Drink responsibly. So the drink is much louder. The responsibly is very short. And so it, like, the command is drink, you know. Don't drink and drive. I mean, I have people listen to it. And then, of course, one of the most famous examples of how you can even turn a negative into a positive with the way it's structured is they added a, when they were, you know, when they advertise drugs on TV or the radio, you know, they have to give the side effects. And they started, you know, they give all these side effects, nausea, vomiting, this, and erections lasting more than 4 hours, contact your doctor. And that's very loud and clear. And so, you know, of course, it's Viagra or Cialis, one of those drugs. So that when they started mentioning that side effect, sales went up.
Well, I think that they know exactly what they're doing. They know how, of course, to get people to do what they want them to do. And, of course, they keep, you know, for a long, long time, of course, they did everything they could to get people smoking, especially women smoking. You know, of course, when I went to medical school, suddenly the cancer of the lung in women was almost unknown of. But, of course, then they hired a man named Edward Bernays, who was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, and Bernays was there. Expert on propaganda. And he actually came up with all sorts of programs. And in every movie you went to, there was a woman smoking. And, of course, in the advertisements, one of the favorite advertisements was, don't eat a sweet, you know, and get fat, take a smoke. Don't, you know, take a sweet, take a smoke. And, of course, using these techniques, now, of course, the second most common cancer in women, common cancer in women today is cancer of the lung, thanks, of course, to the advertising of our tobacco industry. And they knew exactly what they were doing, and those people should be tried and convicted of murder, because it is frank murder. And what's happened to them? Why, they've all retired with fat and very, very lucrative pensions, and, of course, nothing has ever done. In fact, what the government did to protect them was to put a little announcement on the packets of cigarettes that said, you know, these can be lethal for your, you know, they're potentially carcinogenic. And so how could you possibly sue the tobacco industry when it said right there that they were harmful to your health, you know? And, of course, the government's done everything they could, on one hand, to promote smoking. All the time they're trying to convince the American people, of course, we're so concerned about your health. It is not just the cancer. It's, of course, the cancer of the lung. It's cancer of the throat and the larynx, and cancer of the pancreas, and cancer of the breast in women. And certainly, you know, the effect it has on the heart and on the lungs, and certainly on every organ in our body. And they knew that. That's why they promoted this, and they allowed it to be promoted. I mean, it's like taking a little bit of arsenic every day in the name of getting you healthy. Of course, it didn't get you healthy. They knew what they were doing. But we can't let the American people understand that one of the major objectives is population control and killing off the elderly. Once you understand that, so much of what's going on really makes sense today. Well, certainly, Dr. Horton, what is the message you would like to leave with our listeners tonight? Certainly, you've written a number of books, and you're trying to get people to understand what's going on. People really don't understand that when they go to a motion picture, their mind is being controlled. When they watch a television program, in many instances, their mind is being controlled. When they watch our politicians talk, especially somebody like Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, their minds are being controlled. How do we defend ourselves?
Well, thanks for mentioning that, Doctor, and that's a brilliant analogy you gave on, like, the cigarettes, with especially for women, and I always think of Virginia Slims. The one I guess my final comment would be that, you know, God gave us all these wonderful talents, abilities, and skills, and we should use them to our utmost ability. And a lot of these things are neither good nor bad, they just are. But if we use these abilities to learn how our minds work, how you know, influence happens, well, two things happen. It'll make you better at influencing other people, but it can also stop that undue influence, and that's the way I like to think of it, is undue influence, you know, from the media and from politicians on us. So you're making more of a conscious choice based that way. So that's why I encourage people to learn this, get my book, get other people's books on this, and look at things with a honest eye, because God gave us these wonderful skills that we have to do this, and this is how we grow and change and do all that. So, you know, I encourage people like you to keep getting the message out there of this, of empowerment, and wake up. And that's, as a hypnotist, that's my number one rule for people, is to wake up. It's easy to put people into trance. It's harder to bring people out of it. So, and that's what I think we're trying to do. So God bless you, and God bless your audience.
Well, thank you very much. Our guest has been Dr. William Horton. And one more time, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get your products?
Oh, yeah. They can go to www.nfnlp.com. That's nfnlp.com, and have books and products, and everything's discounted for your listeners.
No, you see, NLP, I'm sure, is neuro-linguistic programming. What's the NS for?
It's NF. It's the National Federation of Neuro-Linguistic Programming.
Okay, fine. It's NF, NLP, National Federation of Neuro-Linguistic Programming. Okay, well, it's a lot easier to remember something of that sort if you remember it, what the letters stand for. Dr. Horton, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure, and we'll be perhaps able to talk to you again sometime in the future.
Thank you, and God bless.
You too. Bye-bye. And we're going to be back here in just a moment for us to wrap up this evening's program right here at Radio Liberty.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt, that nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Activity, and of course that is brought out in a book called OK Bomb by Jim Keith, who died under very mysterious circumstances after a minor surgical procedure very shortly before his publisher died under very mysterious circumstances just before his ex-wife died under very mysterious circumstances. The book is no longer in print, but OK Bomb is important. Why? Because Timothy McVeigh wrote a letter to his sister and Mike, a good friend down there in Oklahoma, Charles Key, who's now in the legislature, told me he's seen the letter, and of course it's really very real. Jennifer McVeigh got a letter from her brother saying he was working for a special forces team involved in illegal activity. He told the same story to his roommate, to his cellmate there in the federal prison, who wrote a book called Secrets Worth Dying For. Secrets Worth Dying For, and then of course he's told the same thing to Terry Nichols. But how would you be able to conceal something like that from the American people? Why, we have freedom of the press in America, which means when you own the press, you can have the freedom to censor anything you want to. If you'd like to verify what we're talking about, the book OK Bomb, you can still get it on the Internet. And then, of course, the book Secrets Worth Dying For is available on the Internet as well. You need to document what we say. We'll be glad to get you the information. Jesse Trentino, of course, whose brother was beaten to death in a federal prison because he looked like somebody who was associated with the Oklahoma City bombing. Jesse Trentino, of course, is Terry Nichols' lawyer, and he tells this story. But they cannot let the American people know that they left those people there in the Murrah building in Oklahoma to be killed. Exactly as, of course, they left our boys on the USS Liberty to be killed. We're putting together a great four-tape set on that. We're going to have several DVDs and a packet of information on the USS Liberty and how people at the highest levels of our government and within the highest level of the Navy left those men to be killed on the USS Liberty back in 67, a story we cannot let the American people ever learn. And you can only understand this, you understand where there is organized evil at the highest levels of our government because there really are satanic and Luciferian organizations. If you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it and to get the DVD. You need to hear our talk on the Forbidden Secret. Or a supplement to that, Secret Knowledge. There is a syllabus that goes with the Forbidden Secret. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will want to get the talk we give on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that. If any of you would like to read the publications put out by the other side, oh yes, ladies and gentlemen, they actually do put out publications. We have a little pamphlet they put out called The Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy. The Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy. Who are the Spiritual Hierarchy? They are the secret society that rules the world, according to the other side. I mean, they write about it, how their people are in finance and education and in corporations and in government. And if you get any further items and you ask for the Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy, we'll send it to you. And you must understand that these dark forces permeate every aspect of our life today. And so we do hope that many of you out there will get the information and then understand what's going on and then help us educate others. For we indeed are involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Of course, if you'd like information on emergency long-term food storage, on getting the Berkey products so you can purify your water, on laying in a supply of health products, we have, of course, catalogs and all of this.